Welcome to Voices of the Community. I'm George Koster. This is part two of highlights from our remastered From Bankruptcy to Reinvention, The City of Stockton series. I began recording this documentary in 2016 while visiting my mother, Josephine, a first-generation Italian immigrant whose family owned a motel in South Stockton, and she passed away during production. Former Mayor Michael Tubbs grew up in South Stockton, becoming a city council member and mayor. Today's episode features community members who worked with Tubbs creating organizations addressing generational problems I witnessed firsthand growing up in Stockton. Join associate producer Eric Estrada, highlighting community members still working to transform Stockton.
Our first voice is Barbara Alberson, Senior Deputy Director for Policy and Planning at the San Joaquin County Public Health Services.
And so you're on the steering committee. What would you say from your findings and from the information gathered, the residents' participation, what is Reinvent South Stockton doing to try to execute some of the findings and some of the strategies that organizations come up with?
Reinvent is different from anything I've ever been a part of, and I've been in this world doing this kind of work for decades. It's different. I have never seen this kind of community engagement that's authentic. You know, that sounds a little bit like jargon, but it truly is seeking out and using the voice of the community. As you can see here today, most of the volunteers are kids who live in South Stockton, and it's just delightful to see all these young folks who truly want to make a difference showing up and finding ways to do that, because nothing's worse than giving false expectations, false hopes, and promises. So our commitment is to make sure that we carry out what we can do to help them do what they want to do.
What would you like to see as the best outcomes of your efforts and Reinvent South Stockton's efforts?
The fact that we tie political will to social will, and that sounds jargony again, but that's giving voice to the deciders, the decision makers, so they understand and value that they need to invest and they need to pay attention and they need to give extra attention, actually, to South Stockton. They've been ignored in some ways in terms of infrastructure and new buildings, etc., and apartment complexes that get permitted. As anything you think of across the board, they have had very little investment, and that we need to turn that around. And in order for the deciders to listen to us, the us has to include the community demanding that they get their fair shake.
Do you see that happening? I mean, obviously we have Michael Tubbs, who's helped create Reinvent South Stockton, but also running for mayor. But do you feel like the political powers that be in Stockton are listening and willing to do the hard work?
In a way, they haven't before, and I haven't been here long enough to know the long-term history, but some of the players who we work with all the time, it's resonating, and they're explaining and are proud of the fact that they're seeing changes that they never would have seen before. Just for example, the closing of the New Wave Market, the drug-infested New Wave Market, something they were trying to do for 10 years, and it happened. The cleanup of all the playgrounds, it's happening. Having Michael...
This is Michael Tubbs.
Yes. It's been a catalyst that it's very rare to have a political animal be a part and invested so heavily and deeply and be a part of the movement. Usually you're knocking on the door trying to get the ear of the establishment, and now not only do we have it, but he has a way of asking for things that we could never ask for and for pushing the agenda in a way that we never could. And he does it in such a kind, supportive way that he's making friends where we might make enemies.
Up next is Michael Tubbs, former mayor of the city of Stockton.
One of the things I know you've worked on since you've become a city council person and now mayor, and part of your swearing in, was the whole idea of economic development in downtown, which has been struggling for decades. How is that going with regards to the partnership with the Centro and the downtown merchants?
Yeah, slowly but surely. Luckily, our downtown area has been designated as an opportunity zone, meaning that for folks who are looking to invest, it makes sense to invest in downtown, get the tax benefit, do some good while doing well. But in addition to that, there are some developments coming on, a lot of tent space and others. City Hall is moving. We'll be talking about where we're in this old City Hall. The Sacramento Kings G League team just moved to Stockton, so the Stockton Kings are bringing more life and liveliness to our downtown. So a lot of good things are absolutely happening in our downtown. I think over the next 4 or 5 years, you really begin to see a revive.
I know the waterfront, been a part of the old redevelopment agency. It's been a struggle over the years. Where would you like to see the waterfront go to?
I think we want the waterfront just like either Jack London Square in Oakland or the San Antonio Riverwalk. So we have a vision. We just have to figure out who's our development partner to execute that vision. But again, I think with the Opportunity Zone designation, there's a chance to do something really special there.
But I want to turn to education because I know that's another one of your favorite topics, the whole Stockton initiatives. Can you talk a little bit about the school district? How is it going? Where would you like to take it?
It's going well. They should do the South Stockton Schools Initiative. Now it's the Stockton Schools Initiative. They're beginning work with Lodi, Lincoln Unified. They recently had a State of Education in Stockton Summit where they released a data report that showed the amount of work we have to do with the community, and they're working with parents as soon as they understand that data and push for policy change. They're instrumental in getting us a new superintendent. They are instrumental in pushing the ATG for all policy as a graduation policy for the school district. That work is still continuing. I guess we just like to expand it so that every district has a dedicated group of parents and students who's focused on making the districts do even better.
Do you feel like the school district is receptive to it and they're working with you as partner?
Well, I think especially Stockton Unified School District, particularly their new superintendent, John Daisy, is adamant supporter of Trustee Luntow. Before he was trustee, he was actually the founder or co-founded organization. So he's a big supporter. And people really trust Jasmine, Nancy, the rest of the team, and look forward to them for leadership and for them to push. And sometimes you get on people's nerves.
Coming from South Stockton, growing up there, it's always been a violent place, I know from your own personal tragedy, and that's been another one of your big areas of focus is crime and violence and public safety. I know police was an issue. How do you feel it's going, and where would you like to have it go in the next 2 years?
We still haven't arrived, but for example, this year, non-fatal shooting and homicides are down 35%+ compared to last year, and hoping next year is even lower still. So we're still laser focused on preserving the lives of our citizens. 90% of them who are murderers or victims of homicides are young men of color. So it is through our existing ceasefire strategy, brought in another strategy called Advanced Peace to really focus on the guys who are driving on gun crimes and bringing that number down. Our police department, our police chiefs are doing amazing work with reconciliation, with internal reform around procedural justice and implicit bias training. Again, we have more officers than we've ever had. Stop Stockton, actually, the crime map, it used to be like white, red, and now it's like yellowish, green. So it's no longer one of the most 10 most crime-ridden places in the city, which it had been for decades. So really proud of that. So yeah, we still have a ways to go, but we're trending in the right direction.
Coming up next is our co-host Mike Fitzgerald, retired columnist for the Stockton Record, at our Stockton Town Hall meeting event featuring the voices from our State of Our Youth panel, Tafari Lee, Tyler Lovely Cotton, and Johnny Barrios.
Let me take that over to the next subject area, crime. When I ask the panelists, do you feel safe in Stockton? Do you feel safe where you live? Do you feel safe, say, going downtown? Do you feel that the police are on your side and treat you with respect? And if the answer to any of those questions is no, then what course of action can you take to improve the status quo? Let's hear from someone that hasn't spoken yet.
I think I can chime in on that. So I go to Stockton Collegiate, which is a school downtown. And I think the two questions of do you feel safe downtown and do you feel like the police are on your side? They're two very different questions. Mm-hmm. Like the answer to the first one is I do feel safe downtown because I'm always downtown Monday through Friday because I go to school down there.
Now, let me interrupt and ask you this. Do you feel safe downtown by day and by night, or do you ever go downtown at night?
Well, at night, it's like, oh, that's loud. So, like, the times I have been downtown at night, it's like, I'm not necessarily, like, fearing of anything. I'm more, like, cautious. Because it's not that I know something is going to happen. It's like, you know something could happen.
Because there's fewer people on the street. Okay, but go on with your answer.
And then, so, like, do I feel safe downtown? Yes, because, like, especially when you're just walking around downtown, like, most of what you see is just regular people going about their day. And then you'll see, like, homeless people on the streets and stuff. And, like, I think that's what people make them feel, like, unsafe downtown. But, like, really, there's, like, if you're ever downtown a lot, you'll learn that the homeless people, like, they don't have, like, they're not going to do you any harm. And that, like, that's what a lot of people get wrong. Like, they think that, like, oh, this dude is out here sleeping on the street. He must be, like, trying to rob me. He must be trying to do stuff. But really, like, in reality, most of the time, they're just trying to, like survive. And then to the other question of, do I feel like the police are on my side? The answer to that, a lot of the time, is not really. Because there'll be times, like, so for my school, we get off-campus lunch as sophomores. So, like, there's times where, like, I'll just be outside, like playing music with my friends, eating lunch. And then like cops, there was one time there was like cops on a bicycle and they just like pulled up and they sat on the corner and they just waited until we, and like when we like try to go back to a class, they like crossed the street and they followed us like from the other side of the street as if they were like watching us, even though like we weren't doing anything suspicious. It was just a bunch of kids hanging out.
So, did you talk with them?
Well, no, because I had to go straight back to class. Yeah. But then when they saw, like, I noticed that like when we started going towards the building, that's when they saw, like, turned around and left.
Okay, so is there something that an activist can do to make the police more friendly and responsive and respectful?
I don't think there's, they can't, you can't change somebody and how they feel and what they do. It's all over the news that police do things for no reason and nothing's changed yet, so.
Are you aware of any changes undergoing at the Stockton Police Department these days?
No.
Yeah, well, they've got a reconciliation program. They're part of a national experiment of four cities that are trying to go out and listen to their communities and incorporate the suggestions that they hear and change their practices. Mm-hmm. They're also changing the officer-involved shooting protocols to oversimplify it, to shoot less often. However, there's stuff that's going on in the offices in the police department and stuff that's going on the streets. And they're often the new philosophy in the top hasn't reached the street level officers yet. So I think personally, you would be surprised at what they're trying to do. But I'm listening to you about how well they're doing it on the street. That's not for me to say. That's for you to say. Mm-hmm. Okay. So what about the homelessness, the homeless people that you say you see on the street and that can make you feel uncomfortable? What do we do about that?
It's a lot you could do with the homeless people. You could help them get into shelters. There's a lot of abandoned buildings you could bring back to life and make them into shelters. You could start a program for the homeless and help them get their lives together. But instead, you judge them. I see a lot of police pick a few homeless people up. Instead, you could just help them with getting those buildings
okay.
together.
Anybody else?
Well, I don't know. I was trying, as you were describing our downtown Stockton with all our old buildings and you were saying how beautiful it is and everything, all I was just imagining was all the poverty down there and all the homelessness. And they do try to clear out the homeless, but all the homeless do is move up to the other side of the street, right? And that's what we're seeing. I mean, our crime levels, look at our crime levels. We had, 34 days and 34 deaths? I mean, my friend just died 2 days ago at Lewis Park. He just got shot. That's Stockton right there.
I'm sorry.
You know, every month there's at least 4 or 5 deaths. Or, you know, every day somebody's getting incarcerated. Every day somebody's losing their home or getting, you know, you don't know nobody's life or what they do. As in the police, they do their job. I mean, you know, everybody, they have a job and they do it to the best of their ability, right? And I mean, I've had 3 friends pass away and all their murder cases have been solved. So they are doing their job in the justice system. I would be ignorant to come up here and tell
them. Did you say that the murders were solved?
Yeah.
In arrests and prosecutions?
Mm-hmm.
That's great. And that's probably because not only of good police work, but because the community cooperated in finding mm-hmm. the suspects. And so kudos to the community as well. You have to know who to trust and when, I guess. But I love to see people like that behind bars.
We've reached the halfway point of our inspiring conversation from our acclaimed 2019 series, From Bankruptcy to Reinvention, The City of Stockton. So far, you've heard incredible insights from Barbara Alberson, Michael Tubbs, and our dynamic Stockton Town Hall Youth Panel with Tafari Lee, Tyler Lovely Cotton, and Johnny Barrios. Your listening, sharing, and support makes Voices of the Community possible. Stay with us. We have more powerful highlights coming up. Welcome back to part 2 of our highlight series, From Bankruptcy to Reinvention, The City of Stockton. Once labeled America's most miserable city, Stockton is rewriting a new story, led by its people. Here, artists, youth, and community leaders powering grassroots change and collaboration. Coming up next are more highlights from our Stockton Town Hall meeting featuring the voices of Brandon Leek, founder and CEO of Called to Move, and Rudisha Ransom, executive director of the Sow a Seed Foundation and Tracy City Council member.
Being an educator, not just in terms of like special programs, but having been an educator full time in regular day classrooms, I talked to one of the young ladies who was on the panel and how she explained how like Franklin didn't service her. Franklin didn't provide her with the necessary things that she needed to be able to become successful, because so much of what was provided at this institution was awarded to those who are already excelling, as opposed to being able to benefit those who are in need of the assistance to be able to grow into all who they can be. Right. And what students recognize at a very young age, is as young as kindergarten and first grade, is whether or not people are truly invested in their experience and their growth. And you get teachers in high school who complain about students who are not wanting to put in effort, but aren't looking at the root cause of the fact that they've had teachers, that these students have had teachers from grade school who have not invested, who have not taken the time. They have had administration who has been extremely absent outside of disciplinary action, and who have only, and like our first interaction with discipline turns out to be from these principals, which, you know, inevitably turns us to not enjoy policing, because policing is the same thing as what we get with principals. Anyway, but as we look at what these schools do, they don't end up providing safe spaces for these students to learn. And they oftentimes tell us to leave our issues at the door, when nobody ever leaves issues at the door. Right. If I am not eating, that means that I am not focused in class because my stomach is not full. Right. If I don't have functional water to be able to shower, I am now thinking about whether or not I smell in my classroom, and I'm being made fun for it in my recess time, which does not encourage me to be there. And we have to be able to provide students with an ability to be able to process what goes on in their everyday lives, to then also be able to function inside of a classroom setting, which teachers are not often asked to do enough, and also are not equipped enough to do from the training that is required here in California to be able to do these things.
So all these social problems flow into our schools. How do you equip teachers or administrators to deal with them?
I think we should stop focusing on how much technology should not be in classrooms. I think too often teachers are focused on whether or not, like, oh, are you on your cell phone during this time during class? It's like, instead of focusing on getting rid of things, focus on how you can implement them to be functional during these times. And then not only that, but invest in your actual class. Like, talk to your students. Like, instead of focusing so much, like, we had a student who came up here talking about, instead of just focusing on curriculum, I can tell you as an educator, that was all that was rammed down my throat. Like, are you sticking on pace to curriculum? Are you preparing these students for these tests that they will come at the end of the year? And we're providing this world with illiterate people to how to actually function in an everyday society that requires them to create, not just like constructively think, but creatively think, to be able to solve and deal with the world and its problems.
Okay. Speaking of that, then, I have a couple of questions for the panel. Talking about the real world first, some years ago, the state of California abolished vocational education. Should everybody be on track to go to college, or should some people be learning trades?
I believe it's the student's choice.
And should there be mentors in the schools to help them sort out which direction they might like to take, to apprise them of their options and match their skills? Or is the system inherently unfair enough to do that? Because that's why vocational education was abolished in the first place.
I'm gonna speak to that, and I want to reiterate Brandon's point that it should be the young person's choice, but just like in anything else, you know, when our young people are in school, they don't really care how much people know until they know that those people care. So when you're asking, should there be mentors in school, there should be people in school building those relationships with them, people that they can trust and go to, who know where the resources are, who can help them to navigate a system that's really not designed to help them, while we try to fix that broken system. So it needs to be their choice, but there needs to be someone there that they feel that they have a relationship with, and if they are in that situation, that they need to be guided. We should not, you know, feel like we need to create a caste system and decide you can go to college and you cannot, but we should at the same time make sure that those young people have someone that they feel like they can trust, who can make sure that they have all those options available to them.
Yeah, we want to be sensitive to what you said about the caste system. On the other hand, I know a lot of people my age who are retiring as electricians and other forms of contractors, and they can't sell their business.
Up next are the voices of Tama Brisbane, founder and director of With Our Words Incorporated, and Nicholas Haddon, founder and executive director of the San Joaquin County Pride Center.
Educators on the panel, are the inner city school music programs, are they funded or have they defunded the music programs?
They're woefully funded at best. I would like to pose a question to the young people in the audience. By show of hands, how many of you know somebody that's in the studio working on a project?
Number of hands went up.
How many of you know an aspiring rapper or an MC?
Again, even more hands.
To be a rapper or an MC means you have to have a facility with language. I always tell the rappers that come into our program, Mama T, I don't know if I can be a poet. Well, basically, if you take the beats away from a rapper, you got a lyricist. And a lyricist is simply a synonym for a poet. And everybody has equal access to this microphone. This is an art and a trade in and of itself. And all of this is woefully unacknowledged and unrecognized and not lifted up enough and not funded enough and not appreciated enough in our schools and in our community.
For every dollar spent, $4 comes back in revenue.
That's something that can be addressed to the school board, right? I mean, shouldn't we not be going to the school board and telling them, look, we want some of the budget to be directed to inner city music programs?
We not only want to address it at the school board level, but we also have to put the onus back into the community. Are we providing platforms for when these kids do these things, when they create these magnificent arts projects? Where are we showcasing them? Mm-hmm. Are we putting them in their own little academic gulags and only segregating them to a Franklin or to a Chavez or to an SCI? But are we actually putting them into the community and lifting them up so that we can see the fruits of this kind of labor and the return on that potential investment?
So perhaps the city could have some kind of festival celebrating the musical arts, the youth musical arts.
Or the city and the county can kick down some tax revenue to go towards funding arts.
Thought that's what we did with Measure M.
Lastly, we feature the voice of Anthony Rodriguez, English and math educator at Marshall Elementary.
Another question from the audience. How do you break the school-to-prison pipeline?
You got to tell them. You got to inform your kids. Your kids need to know the truth. You can't beat around the bush no more. You know, my thing with my students is I sit them down and I let them know the truth right when they walk through my classroom. I don't bull crap with them. That's right. The first lesson they hear when they walk through my door is the rose that grew from concrete, and they understand what it means, why he wrote it, why Tupac wrote it the way he did, what's embedded within all those words. And I help my students realize that he was talking about them. But we get deeper into that, and I actually use a article of yours, Mr. Fitzgerald, the nihilism article that you wrote with when Mr. Tubbs was, when what was her name? Anna DeVry, is that how you say it? Devere Smith. Thank you so much. Well, we use her article and we break it down and we talk about, you know, that nihilistic mindset and what it means to grow up in a community that has that mindset and how that affects them. What it means to live in that. And seeing my kids come to reality with that is scary. It's a scary thing because you have to bring them back because it really beats them down. It's a beat down. You have to be honest with them though, that this is real. This is what it is. This is why y'all are dying. This is why you feel that way when you go home. This is why you feel this way when you show up to my classroom, when you show up to the school, when you walk down the halls, when you sit down in that class, when you do this, when somebody's yelling at you, kicking you out of class, sending you to the office multiple times, why you see that little second grader walking around the school all day long. Look it in the face now. Understand it. Now let's come to reality because you are somebody in this community. You have an identity. You have somebody that you are destined to be. Let's bring it back. Let's connect you with many different people in the community that want the same things for you, that look like you, that want you to grow into something more than what your community is teaching you. And it's like I said, it's a scary thing to see and it's a scary thing to be around. But at the end of it all, at the end of this past week that I had in my classroom, you know, I'm able to open up their eyes to the world and open up their eyes to the many different people that I can connect you with, and that this resource is always going to be here for you. You have a hub, a place you can come to get any help that you need. I was yelling at one of my students when I first got here because his grades are not where they need to be. But and I let him know that, dude, you got to let me know this now. You got to come over. Marshall is your hub. Understand that. If you ain't going to get it at Edison, come over to Marshall. My door is always open. They don't have those resources everywhere. That's not available to them everywhere. Our teachers aren't informing our kids of the truth. And it's really scary that's happening, you know, but I'd much rather have my kid be knocked down, me build them back up, send them off to Edison, send them off to Franklin, and know that those values and those things that I have taught them are instilled into their mind. And that they know that these things are available. They know that it's their choice. I can't hold your hand. Jasmine can't hold your hand. We can't hold your hand as you walk through high school and make these choices, but I can inform you of these choices. I can inform you of what's going on. You have to look it into the eyes and you have to make the choice of what you're going to do.
That brings us to the end of part two of our highlights compilation from the Bankruptcy to Reinvention, the City of Stockton series. Our deepest appreciation goes to today's inspiring guests, Barbara Alberson, Michael Tubbs, Tafari Lee, Tyler Lovely Cotton, Johnny Barrios, Brandon Leek, Rhodesia Ransom, Tama Brisbane, Nicholas Haddon, and Anthony Rodriguez, whose stories illuminate Stockton's remarkable transformation journey. Want to explore this story further? Head to voicesofthecommunity.com and navigate to our complete Stockton's Rise from Bankruptcy series. There you'll find extended profiles of our guests, detailed information about their organizations, and concrete ways you can support their community-building efforts. While you're there, browse our archive, sign up for our newsletter for updates on new episodes and events, and, if you can, click donate. Every share and every subscription extends these voices across our region and beyond. Your support helps us produce stories like this and helped us earn the 2025 Alliance for Community Media Foundation Hometown Media Award for Best Informational Talk Show. Coming up in October and November, join us for our special two-part, one-hour highlight shows from our comprehensive 105-episode COVID-19 pandemic series. These compilations showcase amazing stories from local nonprofits, small businesses, and local government workers who navigated extraordinary challenges together with our community. Don't miss these powerful testimonies of resilience, service, and community spirit. Tune in for inspiration. Today's episode was made possible through our co-production partnership with KWDC 93.5 FM, the home of San Joaquin Delta College's digital media. We also want to thank both Ariana Brogger and Leo Marquez of KWDC for their wonderful support of this special series. Special thanks to our co-host Mike Fitzgerald, and thanks to Casey Nance from Citron Studios for the graphics magic. Take Voices of the Community with you on the go. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your favorite podcast app. Enjoying the show? Please rate and review us on your favorite app. It helps more people discover these important stories. Go to youtube.com/@GeoCoster to watch or listen to all of our past and future episodes. And you can always go to voicesofthecommunity.com to listen and watch our 5 series and from our archives. Have feedback or ideas for shows? We'd love to hear from you. Email george@georgecoster.com. I'm Eric Estrada from San Francisco. On behalf of our team, thank you for joining us. Until next time, remember, your voice matters.